This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Competitive golf may not have as glamorous a reputation as other sports, but it has a storied history with multi-million dollar purses at stake for professionals in the most prestigious events. Now, for years, professional golf has been dominated by the PGA Tour, the main organizer of the biggest competitions in the sport. However, the industry has been rocked by the emergence of a new tour organizer known as LIV Golf, which is backed by Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund. On the show today, sports writer Bob Holmes joins me to help untangle all the issues at play. Bob, good morning. Thanks very much for joining me.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
So why has the creation of the LIV Golf Tournament caused so much uproar in the world of professional golf?
Well, I think it's the sheer weight of money for a start. I mean, Greg Norman, the front man, he himself called it mind-bogglingly enormous. Well, it is. And I think that's going to get anybody's attention, even those who don't normally follow golf. Because what's this all about? Why is, even for Saudi Arabia, why are they chucking so much at this?
Maybe we can throw some numbers in there, Bob. So I know that LIV Golf, is it just the first tournament that they're offering $25 million in prize money? Is that the mind-boggling sum that you're referring to?
That's for each tournament, 25. Yeah, the mind-boggling sum was the billion or near billion US dollars that was offered to Tiger Woods to become the face of it. And he turned it down. That's not even to play. That's just to be the face of it. He turned it down. I think that says an awful lot.
Okay. The fact that Saudi Arabia is putting so much money in this tournament, walk me through why they're doing this then. What is the rationale actually that they're putting all this money behind a new golf tournament that's going to go up against all these other organizers that have been in the industry for much longer? Yeah.
Well, it's sports washing. Governments whose reputation is not quite as squeaky clean as they would like seem to think that this sports washing, i.e. investing big money into a sport to divert or distract attention from the regime itself, is a successful formula. It's been tried now for a few years. I mean, there are football clubs that have experienced this for 10 years or more, like Manchester City, most notably, and PSG in Paris. And I think the jury is still rather out on whether it's actually improved the country's image or not. It's certainly improved those football clubs, mm-hmm. having millions thrown at it. They've undergone complete transformations. Certainly Manchester City, who are now a European super club. But has it altered the perception of Abu Dhabi or the UAE, for instance? Or we go to Qatar, which is staging the World Cup. I mean, they first of all transformed Paris Saint-Germain in a similar way to what Abu Dhabi did Man City, but they're also staging the World Cup, the biggest sporting event in the world outside of the Olympics, getting massive attention. So they think that it's going to deflect from their less than pristine human rights record. But is it? Because no sooner had they got the World Cup, then the Guardian newspaper did an expose on the workers who are putting these stadiums up and building the infrastructure in Qatar. And they discovered that no less than 6,500 of the workers had died. Now, we didn't know about that and wouldn't have done had it not been for the World Cup. So although the stadiums are state of the art and it's going to get huge publicity, and it'll show the technology that Qatar has and the organizational prowess, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't hide the fact that 6,500 people have died working on this. And in any construction, you don't get that sort of casualty figure unless there's something seriously wrong. This is a protracted period whereby these people have been treated rather shabbily, to say the least. And they've improved as a result of this expose. The conditions have improved, to be fair, but that figure is still there, and it's not disputed by any credible human rights organization.
We're going to come back to this issue of sports washing, and especially in the on the issue of the Qatar World Cup. But just coming back to LIV Golf and the sums that Saudi Arabia is putting into golf, Bob, do you have a theory why golf is chosen by Saudis to invest in? Why golf out of all the other sports?
Well, they are investing in others. I mean, Newcastle United, football, Formula One, they've staged a race there. They've done wrestling, World Heavyweight Championship boxing. So it isn't just golf, but golf probably suits the profile. They've got plenty of sand there, haven't they? No shortage of bunkers. But they've built decent golf courses. They've had tournaments in the past which haven't raised much more than an eyebrow. And some of the players from the PGA Tour went along and they got permission to play just in one tournament, which didn't clash with any other event. So far, so good. But I think the difference between this and, say, the investment in Newcastle United or just one-off events is that this is actually a threat to the organization of the sport. It's an existential threat. And now they say it isn't because they say they want to coexist. But if you believe that, you believe in fairies.
Help me understand that, Bob. I don't see why the existing organizers should feel so threatened by a new entrant. How does it affect the state of sport as it is?
Well, they're offering extraordinary sums, which totally dwarf the amounts, the already generous amounts that the PGA Tour is offering. So if you've got somebody coming alongside and offering, you know, perhaps 10 times what you're offering, and even if you come last, you're likely to pick up more than you are in the other event if you come, say, in the top 10 or something. Sooner or later, these players are going to say, well, hang on, we don't really need to play in these other events, do we? We just play in the big events where we get $1 million for showing up. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the reason. And I don't believe that they would be content just to coexist. I think there's more to it than that. But that's further down the road. Mm. But I can understand why the PGA Tour is getting its hackles rising over this, because it's taking them on board head to head, and it's a direct challenge. It's just unsustainable for anyone to keep paying out that kind of money. The PGA Tour is sustainable. They pay millions. You get a couple of million now for winning a major tournament. But that money is coming in from sponsors, and the PGA Tour is a viable business proposition. Whereas this is just coming out of the Saudi public investment fund. Okay, you could say that they've got unlimited wealth in terms of oil. But as we know, the oil is going to run out one day, isn't it? I mean, they cannot keep this going forever.
So it threatens the business interests of the PGA Tour and all the others in the golfing industry
yes.
right now who are earning
yes.
a lot from the current status quo, essentially.
Yes, it does. Yes.
I'm speaking to sports writer Bob Holmes on the debate in professional golf over the LIV Golf Tournament. We'll have more after the break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Thanks for staying tuned to Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. I'm Shazlana Mokhtar, speaking to sports writer Bob Holmes. On the show today, we're looking at the issue of sports washing and how this is playing out in the field of professional golf. In terms of gameplay, is LIV Golf different from the current PGA tournaments held? I mean, does it offer anything new or unique that could draw the interest of new fans or younger fans? Is that something that the PGA Tour is also worried about?
Well, it doesn't really. I mean, the biggest difference is that there's a shotgun start. That means everybody starts at the same time and therefore finishes at the same time. It makes sense because it doesn't take as long. But this is an international tournament supposedly building up to a climax. And well, they don't have that where the clinching putt will be held. You know, that's what I mean. But the difference between this and that revolution that occurred before in cricket, and it goes back a long way, but I think it's worth mentioning. In the 1970s, there was an Australian broadcaster, Kerry Packer, who revolutionized cricket. Now, he did really revolutionize it. I mean, he introduced colored clothing instead of all whites, floodlights. He had drop-in pitches so that the pitch was always playable. He put cameras in the stumps, cameras in the bats. I mean, this was a complete revolution, and it transformed the game. Now, this golf thing, it's not doing any of that. All it's got is a 54 holes. The fields are shorter, smaller, so it's hardly promoting golf when there's only 48 guys in it, whereas there's about 150 start in the major tournaments. So it's not a revolution. And I don't see how. I mean, you can see the spin-off benefits of certain sports like Formula One or heavyweight boxing or something like that. You can see how a country, a host nation, can associate itself with that and gain some spin-off from it. But this, no. This is being played in obscure backwaters. I mean, they're not playing on the major courses of the world. They're not playing at Augusta or St. Andrews. There's one that was in the UK just a week or two ago. It was played on a former landfill in a village 50 kilometers from London. It was in the middle of nowhere. They don't seem to have thought this through thoroughly.
Okay, so you've got very strong opinions against the LIV Golf tournament, Bob. Talk to me about the reaction from the professional players themselves. Because as you mentioned earlier, Tiger Woods did turn down a $1 billion US dollar offer to be the face of LIV Golf. But there have been other golfers who weren't as reluctant to, I guess, partake in the pot, yeah?
Yes. And now it seems to be a numbers game as to how many will actually go for this. It's about 20 in the low 20s right now out of the top 100 players who have actually signed up for it. The most notable so far, Phil Mickelson, he was given, I think, $200,000 to just sign up, and then he qualifies for prize money on top of that. Some of the leading lights have joined, having said they wouldn't. And this is a bit alarming for the PGA Tour. The latest one, Bruce Koepka, is on record as having said, I owe my earnings to the PGA Tour. I'm going to stick by them. I'm a loyal servant to the PGA Tour, singing the praises. And the next thing you know, he's gone and joined. And this is angering some of the other players now. Rory McIlroy is one that's come out and called them duplicitous. And they're getting a lot of stick for this. But the older players, you can almost see why they've done it. They're at the end of their careers, and they're not going to win any huge money anymore on the circuit. So they've taken the money while they can. It's just a pure and simple money grab. And there's no question of doing good for Saudi Arabian golf. I mean, if they wanted to benefit Saudi Arabian Gulf. They just hire a bunch of coaches and take them over there and get them to teach the kids. They've got the courses. So why lavish these already multimillionaires with even more millions? For what? It's only because they think it's going to benefit Saudi Arabia. But I question, as I've said, I question that because it's highlighting. I mean, we wouldn't have probably heard about those 81 people that were killed in March, that were executed. We probably wouldn't have heard of that had it not been for this focus of attention on Saudi sports washing. So I wonder whether this might even backfire.
On Saudi Arabia. I wonder, Bob, what you think that the notion of sports washing means for the rest of the sporting community, in particular the players themselves, the spectators, all the sponsors. Yeah, if sports washing is said to be going on, what onus does that leave for other people in terms of how they participate in the event? Like, for example, the Qatar World Cup, as you highlighted, there have been many questionable deaths in the construction of all these stadiums and facilities. Knowing what we know then, does that mean the rest of us have a duty not to get involved?
Well, if you wanted to be really strict about it, yes. I mean, you would say you wouldn't have anything to do with it whatsoever. But the way these things happen, I mean, the title sports washing came years later. We didn't really know why they were doing it. They were just putting money into various things, and certain clubs and fans, players, they just thought, well, we're just lucky to be receiving this kind of money, you know. I didn't really understand what was behind it. And then somebody coined the phrase sports washing, and they cottoned on. I don't expect fans of Newcastle United, for example, to boycott the club because Saudi Arabia is now owning it. I mean, these fans have been fans for a lifetime. You know, it's a big part of their lives. It wasn't down to them that the Saudis took over, you know. But this golf is a little bit different, you see. These guys are fully aware of what they're getting into, and they're jumping at it without much hesitation. So I don't think you can compare the Newcastle United footballers with the golfers that have taken this Saudi money. I think there is a difference.
Okay. So you would see a difference there. But what about for events like the World Cup then, and for these spectators going to the World Cup? Would you put them in a similar group as, I suppose, the Newcastle United fans?
Well, yes. I think it's, I mean, we don't live in a perfect world. I mean, if you really wanted to get down to it, you would hardly dare get out of bed in the morning for fear of financing some dodgy operation somewhere in the world. It's a very complicated business. But the World Cup has been going getting on for about 100 years, and fans look forward to it as a highlight. And if they want to go, I think it's up to them. I don't think they can really be accused of the
enabling
same sort of...
Or
no,
supporting...
Not on the level.
Okay.
Not really. It's by degree, really. You know, there's a little bit of you that tells you this is not quite right. But then again, it's hardly a heinous crime, you know, to be supporting it if you've been doing it all your life, you know. So there's a little bit of a gray area there.
I want to come back to LIV Golf and PGA Tour, Bob. And I'm wondering what you think, how the PGA Tour is going to strategize moving forward. Because with the first LIV Golf Invitational Series, they were quite strict on the players who decided to participate in LIV Golf. They suspended some of them, I believe, and said that they wouldn't be able to participate in other PGA Tour tournaments. Do you think that having that very strict red line will benefit PGA Tour moving forward, or are they going to become more lenient? What do you think PGA Tour is going to do to ensure that its dominance still stays?
Well, it's also increased the prize money for some of its own events and even created new ones with very large sums. Still not in the Live Golf League, but enough to make people think. And like I said before, I think it's down to numbers now. If the floodgates really do open and half the, say, top 100 guys join Live Golf, then I think you've got a crisis for the PGA Tour. And they would have to think the unthinkable of actually sitting down and talking to the Live Golf guys. But they're hoping it won't get to that. They're hoping they can staunch the flow. Because if it gets to that and it goes to court, it's likely that Live Golf will win. Because the precedence for this kind of thing, the courts always come out on the side of the players because they are considered free agents. So although they play on the PGA Tour, they're not actually employees of the PGA Tour. They are individual contractors. They sign up to play for that particular tournament and they'll get the prize money and thank you very much. But they're not workers for the PGA Tour. So yes, it's not impossible that they actually sit down and sort this out. But I think that we're probably getting to the peak now of this. There may be a few more join, but I don't think they're going to get the majority of top golfers. There may be 30 or so, but I don't think they get the majority. No.
Okay, I think that's something we're going to keep watching to see what happens, Bob. Thank you very much for speaking with me and sharing your insights.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking to sports writer Bob Holmes on Pressing Matters. He's a regular football commentator on BFM's football show, which will be back on the airwaves when the new season commences. You can catch up on the podcast on the BFM app. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.